Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Locker Room. I'm your host, Tommy Tellerino, alongside my co-host here, Zachary Roderick. We have another great recap of week one in for you, along with some week two NFL picks. I'm happy to say, Zach, you're back in one piece from your trip to Buffalo.
It was a little scary at times. I didn't know if I was going to make it out in one piece. My jersey was not damaged at all, surprisingly. I was debating wearing my Penn State shirt, but I stuck true to my black and gold and wore the jersey.
Glad to hear. You had a busy weekend, no? Two football games, Penn State Saturday, Steelers Sunday. How was it?
I mean, hey, both my teams came out on top, so I can't complain. I was expecting the Steelers to lose, but very happy they beat the Bills in week one.
Can't complain about that. All right, so let's jump right into the Thursday night game. Very controversial game, Washington football team, New York Giants, you know, NFC least is what they're called. But it ended up turning out to be a pretty good game. I don't know if you saw everything, but what were your thoughts on the game?
I thought it was a very back and forth contest, at least towards the end there. There were three lead changes in the last 5 minutes. There was a missed field goal at the end, but wait, there is a flag.
That's right.
Hopkins, I thought he was going to miss the second attempt too, but he barely got it in, and the Washington football team last second finish, they beat the Giants. I was very happy. I picked the Washington football team. I don't know how you felt about it, but I can't complain.
Yeah, I was expecting not that great of a game as it turned out, but I'm glad it ended up turning out the way it did. But let's jump into the recap. So Giants really came out strong. Washington, I believe, turned the ball over, and Giants had 11-play drive, 75 yards, and it was capped off with newly crowned dual-threat quarterback Daniel Jones, I'd say. I don't know, leading the team in rushing yards and getting a 6-yard TD first drive. Not bad for him. But Washington would answer right back in the second quarter. They drove down, 11-yard touchdown with Taylor Heinicke and Scary Terry himself, Terry McLaurin. You know, and then Graham Gano hits a chip shot, 23-yard field goal in the second quarter, making it a 10-7 game. And then the football team ends the half with an 84-yard drive, 12 plays, and McKissick gets a 2-yard touchdown, 14-10 at half. So all in all, you know, that's a pretty solid half for both teams. You know, it was back and forth, kind of more offensive than I was thinking. And then the Giants would come out strong in the second half. You know, they get the field goal to start, and then a 33-yard touchdown pass between Daniel Jones and Darius Slayton, who almost connected for two touchdowns in that game, but we'll get right to that. So then later on in the third, Washington would chip away. They'd hit a 49-yard field goal, making it a 2017 game. Giants are still up. Fourth quarter rolls around, and like you said, it was back and forth for a while. There were five field goals between the two of them, and Daniel Jones would throw a crucial incomplete pass to take a 2-score lead with the ball, hitting Slayton's fingertips in the end zone. 13-yard separation. Zach, what happened? You got to make that play if you're a receiver.
I think they both messed up. He definitely should have caught it, but he's on a full sprint, which he shouldn't be on a full sprint. He's got 13 yards of separation. He's Danny Dimes. He should be able to he doesn't need to throw it that far ahead of him. He's got plenty of room. He could have threw it a little short. He turns around a little bit, catches it, stumbles into the end zone. That's a touchdown for you. You got a commanding lead. But, no, he threw it too far. Darius Slayton, like I said, he should have caught it, but it just went off his fingertips. So, it's unfortunate for the Giants, but something they got to learn.
Yeah, you know, Danny Dimes, it wasn't a bad throw. It wasn't a great throw, but both of them, you got to make that play. You make that play, you win the game, you're 1-1 instead of 0-2. No one wants to be 0-2. But Washington does get the football back, and then Taylor Heinicke with 2:22 left in the game. Washington down one, 27-26. And he throws a crucial pick to Bradberry for the Giants. Amazing play by Bradberry, but not what you want to see out of Heinicke if you're Washington. But Giants would eventually punt the ball, and Washington would put together a 2-minute drive. to end the game, and it ultimately led to Hopkins putting up a 48-yard field goal, being no good, but Giants D lineman Dexter Lawrence jumps off sides, gives Washington another chance, 43-yard field goal, this time splits the upright. Washington gets their first win of the year. Taylor Heinicke gets his first career win as a starter, and Giants are left dumbfounded after they basically beat themselves.
Yeah, this was a very hard-fought game. It was pretty equal. Time of possession was equal. The third down efficiency was pretty equal. And penalty yards for both teams were very equal. And it came down to the wire, but Washington ended up edging out the Giants. Back to the Giants, though, let me talk some stats for them. They got 391 total yards. 228 of those were passing yards, and 163 were rushing yards. Like you said, Danny Dimes, dual threat. He had 95 of those yards, the majority of them. And they had 21 first downs. Daniel Jones, he went 22 for 32. Pretty good. Like I said, 249 yards. One touchdown to Darius Slayton. Could have been two. He also had a rushing touchdown. Saquon Barkley had 13 carries for 57 yards. You like to see that number go up, but he's still kind of – they're easing him back into the game. Sterling Shepard – I'm amazed by what he's been doing for them. He looking like the star wide receiver there when it's supposed to be Kenny Galladay. What do you think about that?
Yeah, he's definitely stepping up there. It's been a couple weird years for him there in New York because he's always seemed like he's going to be the guy. He gets injured. They bring in Galladay this time. And honestly, Galladay's attracting those better defenders, and Shepard's getting some better matchups for him. I can definitely see him having a great year in New York.
But, yeah, he had 9 receptions for 94 yards. Darius Slayton, he had 3 receptions for 54 yards and had that touchdown catch. And Kenny Galladay, he only had 3 receptions and 38 yards. He was not happy. He was arguing with Danny Dimes on the sidelines after a crucial drop by Darius Slayton. He was not happy. He said, "I want the ball." But Danny Dimes said after the game that they have a great relationship outside of the – like off the field, and he thinks that he's going to be able to get him the ball. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely see where Galladay's coming from, but you know, you never want your teammates fighting like that. It's just not good as a team to be seen like that. But I do believe that they'll come back. They'll score a touchdown together next week, maybe, and all will be good. So I'm not too worried about it.
Also for the Giants, there's that amazing interception by James Bradberry. You said that that's not what Washington fans like to see. It definitely isn't, but I think that was 100% the defender making an amazing athletic play. He came from behind the receiver and just tumbled over and caught it. I wasn't expecting it at all. How about the Washington stats?
So, yeah, let's hop into the Washington football team stats. So, obviously, we talked about how Taylor Heinicke had a good game. You know, first career starting win. You know, he's 34 of 46, 336 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. Overall, it's a good game for him. You couldn't ask him to do more. And then they were led in the receiving game by Terry McLaurin himself with 11 catches, 107 yards, and a touchdown. Great game as usual. You know, he's been putting up great numbers with some of these awful quarterbacks. You know, he's going to be a real special talent in the league for a while. And it looks like he's already Heinicke's favorite target. And then for the running game, it was mostly McKissick, or running and passing game. It was also J.D. McKissick getting somewhat done with 5 catches, 83 yards and a touchdown, only 10 rushing yards. But between him and Antonio Gibson, he definitely had the bigger game. And then Logan Thomas added 5 catches for 45 yards. Solid game, nothing great, nothing bad. And then the biggest catch of the game came from Ricky Seals-Jones. He had a 19-yard touchdown catch, and it was right in the right corner of the end zone. Perfectly placed ball by Taylor Heinicke. It was a great play. Adam Humphries contributed a little bit, 7 catches for 44 yards. You know, nothing too great. And then, like we said, Gibson didn't really have that great of a game. Only 13 rushes for 69 yards. Was really shut down by the Giants' D. And they did a good job scheming around him. You got to give props where it's due with the Giants. But overall, I think they played good on both sides of the ball. They didn't really let up a lot of touchdowns. You know, you're not happy with field goals, but the way that they were leading, they had a bend don't break mentality, and it worked out for them.
Yeah, I love that pass by Tyler Heinicke. It was literally placed where only his guy could get it. You can't complain with that. That shows a lot of promise. A lot of people are thinking that this might be the franchise quarterback for the Washington football team. What do you think about that?
I definitely could see him under center for a while. I think he's going to be a good quarterback, but I believe what the media was doing after the game, comparing him to like Russell Wilson under center, that's a little too much. It's just one game. That's it. Let him be himself. Let him try to evolve as a quarterback and stop all this nonsense saying, oh my God, he's already like Russell Wilson with his confidence under center. No, let him develop. You're putting way more pressure on him than he needs.
Now, if you're Heinicke and you're getting these comparisons, what are you thinking?
Honestly, I would tune it out and just be like, I just got to keep playing the way I am. Just I'd keep moving forward. I'd kind of tune out the media a little bit. And then, you know, they as a team, they had 407 yards. They did lose a time of possession, but they did have 25 first downs, and they did lose the turnover battle. But takeaways from these games is I do think Washington found their quarterback for a while, and I do think that they can compete in the NFC East with Heinicke. And I'm a little worried about Antonio Gibson. You know, he was supposed to have a huge role in Washington this year. And the first week he had 20 rushes, 90 yards, which is okay. And this week he only had around 70 yards. But he's still looking for his first touchdown. For someone who had such a great year last year, I don't know how it's going to be for him this year so far.
Yeah, it seems like they're struggling to find the end zone with their running backs. I mean, J.D. McKissic had a touchdown, but he's not their lead back. And you would have expected Antonio Gibson to get that touchdown. But I don't know. It's just the second week. I think he's got plenty of talent. He'll come around at least come week five. But right now, yeah, I'd be a little worried about him.
Yeah. Also, some other questions I had for this game after watching is like, if you're the Giants, where do you go from here? You're 0-2. You know, it's not a great start to the season. And you're not out of it yet because you're in the NFC East, but you have a lot of problems now with one of your offensive linemen going out for the year, and the offense isn't looking that great.
Yeah, this is the fifth year the Giants are 0-2. Well, fifth year in a row, at least. Honestly, I don't really think it matters where the Giants are going. I don't think they're going anywhere. This is not their year. They had a great game, a hard-fought match, but they lost. And if they want to do anything this year, these are the games that they have to win. They can't be making small mistakes. And they, like, the main mistake that I see here is that drop pass in the end zone for Darius Slayton. He's either got to catch that or Danny Dimes has got to throw it not as far.
Yeah. Also, you know, Danny Dimes, that contract's coming up soon. Do you give him the extension? Do you give Saquon the extension? You know, these are some answers, or these are some questions you got to answer pretty soon.
Do either of them want to stay with that offensive line?
That's the thing. Well, who's taking Danny Dimes, though?
Now, who's taking Danny Dimes? I don't know who's taking him, but Saquon, I bet he's definitely going to have some suitors for him.
And do you think Saquon can, you know, turn things around? Because really, since his rookie year, we haven't seen a lot from him. Do you think this is the year that he gets back on track, or is it going to be another dud year for him?
I honestly don't know. I'm scared for him, but this game, it really wasn't that bad. Like I said, he had 13 carries for 57 yards, which is like 4.4 average, which honestly, that's not bad. That's about league average. I mean, it might not be up to his standards, but if he gets his 20 carries a game and he gets involved in the passing game a lot, I could see him being a real playmaker for him. And I'm hoping that he does a lot better than what he has been doing as a Penn State fan, as a Saquon Barkley fan. But what are your ideas about that?
You know, I definitely think Barkley has the potential to be a great running back, but you know, we've seen him have two major injuries in his 4 years being in the league now. And I just hope he can stay healthy to make it to his next contract, because teams are going to look at that and be like, why am I going to waste my money on him? He's injured every year. This doesn't make sense. But I definitely hope he can turn things around. And I kind of want to see him get more in the passing game. His rookie year, he was in the passing game a lot with Eli Manning, but you never know. As for the Giants, though, they look for their first win against the Falcons at home next week. They may be able to get it done. That's definitely not going to be one of the better matchups for week three. But Washington's going to have a tough test. They're going on the road against the Bills. Now, do you think Taylor Heineke is going to have the game like he did this week?
I'm going to be honest. I don't think so. He faced a worse Giants team. The Bills are supposed to be one of the best teams in the AFC. I don't think they're going to be able to – I don't think he's going to be able to put up those kind of numbers. He's not going to be able to make mistakes like he did in this game. He's going to have to be making the perfect throws like he did on that one play in the end zone. But I think he could have a good week, but I wouldn't count on it.
Yeah, I think it's a tough test for him. I think this is really the first game where it's like, all right, you got to step up. You got to lead us to this victory. But with Thursday night behind us now, let's talk about the week one games. You know, we had some solid games week one. What was the biggest game you thought that you watched?
Okay, so, you know, as a Steelers fan being at the game, I got to talk about the Steelers-Bills game. So the Steelers, they trailed the Bills 10-0 at halftime. I was a little scared, but they outscored the Bills 23-6 in the second half. The Steelers had back-to-back field goals to reduce their deficit 10-6. Shortly after, they had a drive, mostly helped by the pass interference on the Bills, but Deontay Johnson gave them the lead with a juggling catch in the back left corner of the end zone. That was an amazing catch. Steelers had help from special teams after that. Miles Killebrew, he got a blocked punt to extend their lead 20-10. He took it back to the end zone. And then both teams were swapping field goals towards the end. The final score ended up being 23-16. And big money man TJ Watt, he had two sacks and a forced fumble in his first game since the new contract. I think Steelers defense did great. The defense honestly probably won them this game, and they held the second highest scoring offense to just one touchdown all game. What do you think about that game?
You know, I thought it was a great game. I was not expecting the Steelers to come out with a win, but they did do it in the fashion I think that they did. You know, the defense really stepped up and the special team. If they don't get that block punt, they don't win that game. But I don't know if it's a fluke or not. You know, I definitely could see these teams coming back to face each other, and the Bills was game planning a little bit better. What do you think? Do you think the Steelers, if they match up with the Bills in the playoffs, they get it done again?
I think it'll be another low scoring game, but I, once again, like, if the Steelers defense can hold up like they did in this game, then there's a chance. I'd never count their defense out. I'm just scared for their offense, and who knows if injuries will be a problem come playoff time. Big Ben is basically the Steelers' only quarterback right now, so if he gets injured, they're either playing Mason Rudolph or Dwayne Haskins. So that's a major downgrade, and they need to hope that he holds up and this defense holds up.
Yeah, I definitely was not impressed with Najee Harris, though. I know that he got a lot of the workload, but I want to say it was around like 49 yards total for rushing.
Yeah, it wasn't that good. Being at the game, I was a little upset with how he performed, but it's his first game against a really good defense. I think he's going to have a lot better performances come in the future. And Steelers are playing down for quite a bit of this game, so it wasn't really all about that rushing attack. They weren't down by much, so they were able to get some rushing towards the end of the game, and he had some good plays towards the end. But, yeah, you can't count on him at the beginning of that game. The Bills' defense was fresh, and they held him pretty well.
Yeah, I do think he will turn things around, though, because he's facing the Raiders next week, who gave up a lot of rushing yards, really, against the Ravens. So I think he's got a week two matchup where it's in his favor more than the Buffalo Bills.
I had another matchup last week that I really liked. That, speaking of your Raiders-Ravens, I like that a lot. The Ravens jumped out to a 14-0 lead with Tyson Williams' 35-yard rushing touchdown and a Marquise Brown touchdown. Raiders pushed back with Josh Jacobs' touchdown and then a Carlson field goal. The score was 14-10 at the half. The third quarter was just a second. Was pretty boring. Ravens were the only team to score. They had a field goal. But the Raiders tied the game in the next quarter with a Josh Jacobs, his second touchdown of the game. Latavius Murray gave the Ravens another lead, 24-17. Big man Darren Waller, he gets in the game. I mean, he was all over this game. He had 19 targets. That's unheard of for a tight end. Then the score is 24-24. Both teams were able to swap field goals. The game's going to overtime. Zay Jones seals it for the Raiders, 33-27. Yeah, like I said, Darren Waller, 19 targets, 10 receptions, 105 yards, and one touchdown. What do you think of that mammoth performance by Darren Waller?
You know, he's the only target there, really. I think he's done a great job the past couple of years there in Vegas / Oakland. And I think he definitely could be the best tight end in the league this year if he's getting the numbers like that. I mean, Derek Carr's just going to him over and over again. But how about John Gruden, though, saying we won twice? You know, the first touchdown got called back in overtime, and he was fired up after the game about that.
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. But they were able to come away with the victory anyways, even after that call back. But, yeah, I thought that those are the two most interesting games to me. What were your most two interesting games?
So the most interesting games I watched for me was the Saints and the Packers. That was the biggest statement win of the week, I think. Saints came out and just dominated against Green Bay. You don't see that a lot, you know. I know they were down in Jacksonville and the heat kind of got to Green Bay, but it was not a pretty sight for Packers fans. You know, Noah came out. We saw famous Jameis Winston ball out. You know, it's the cataracts, man. It's the cataracts. He can see now. He is going to have a good year. I'm not going to say great, but I think he'll definitely have a good year down there in NOLA. But some stats from the game, you know, Jameis Winston, 14 of 20, only 148 yards, and most of it coming off a big bomb touchdown to Deontay Harris for a 55-yard grab. But he threw five touchdowns, and he has showed he's improved under that Peyton mentorship. You know, there were plays in the game that if he was in Tampa, he would have forced the ball for a pick. And this time he's sitting in the pocket, he's waiting, doesn't see anything. Okay, I throwing it out of bounds. So I really like how he's matured as a quarterback in there. Kamara had a great game as well. 20 carries, 80 yards, one receiving touchdown. He played a big role in the offense, really. You know, he didn't have as many catches as he usually does. You know, Drew Brees is gone now, so we are going to see a lot deeper passes. So I don't know how involved he's going to be in the passing game, but overall, he's still solid in the run game. And Juwan Johnson, backup tight end, had a great game for the New Orleans Saints. Three catches, 21 yards, but two touchdowns. This could be Jameis Winston's biggest red zone threat for the foreseeable future because Michael Thomas is out now, and he's probably the biggest guy they have. And then Penn State legend. Yeah. Yes. And then, like I said earlier, Deontay Harris, two catches, 72 yards, and it was the big 55-yard touchdown grab. But really, the biggest winner or the biggest MVP in my eyes from that Saints game was Sean Payton. The biggest part of the game really came with the best – he had the best game plan to beat the Packers. You know, Green Bay only had three drives in the first half. When was the last time you saw Aaron Rodgers on the field for three drives in the first half? I don't think that's ever happened.
Probably not, honestly.
Yeah.
What amazed me most was that Packers were held to just 3 points. Aaron Rodgers couldn't even get a touchdown. This is the guy that threw the most touchdowns last year. He won MVP. You're holding him to zero touchdowns. And Devontae Adams, who we've all heard how he's the best receiver in the game right now, and they couldn't combine for anything blows my mind.
Yeah, Devontae Adams, you know, he did have the 5 catches, 56 yards, but Rodgers did not look like himself there. And really, back to Sean Payton, he really made the crucial decisions to go on fourth down multiple times, and they paid off. I think that's what really helped him keep Aaron Rodgers off the field. They'd get down to fourth and one, and it's like, oh, we're punting the ball. No, they're going for it, and it paid off for him. So I think that was a great decision by Sean Payton. But some other stats, New Orleans had 322 yards. They led the Packers by almost 100 yards in that. They forced 3 turnovers on Green Bay. They had 34 minutes of possession compared to Green Bay's 25, 22 first downs compared to Green Bay's 14. And Green Bay, you know, there's not a lot of stats going on with this game for them, but the Packers' offensive line, it did not hold up for them. They were shut down completely in the run game to start. And you don't see that a lot either, but that line is diminished. You know, they're missing their best linemen, and a lot of their other linemen have switched position on the line, which, you know, that's not always the best thing to do as a team. But like we said, Rodgers was not himself. 15 of 28, 133 yards, 2 interceptions. You know, I don't remember the last time he threw multiple interceptions in a game. Jordan Love ended up coming in. And, you know, he played okay. Nothing – I mean, it was garbage time, so nothing really. But Aaron Jones, 5 carries, 9 yards. A.J. Dillon, 4 carries, 19 yards. They just – they couldn't do anything. And then in the receiving game, Devontae Adams was leading the way with 5 catches, 56 yards. Other than that, everyone else was below 35 yards receiving. It's something you don't see often, and I think – moving forward, the Saints are contenders in the playoffs. I don't know what your thoughts are on the Saints, but I definitely could see them competing for the Bucs for the division and definitely getting a wild card.
Heading into the season, I was not expecting anything of the Saints. But after that statement game, I think they showed us they're still a very, very good team. They could make the playoffs pretty easily. If they don't get the division, there's a very good chance that they could get a wild card. They definitely impressed me.
Yeah. Some other team that impressed me, I talked about them last week on the podcast, you know, the miracle did not come true, but it definitely was the best game of the week. Browns versus Chiefs. Ultimately, Mahomes was Mahomes leading the Chiefs to another comeback. They ended up winning this game 33-29 over the Browns. But the Browns looked strong. They really did. They were leading most of the game, and they held on to it as long as they could, but they just could not shut down Kels and Hill. You know, those playmakers, man, when you get those two together, how do you stop that as a defense?
I don't think you can, honestly. They've done it over and over again. This is their third year in a row just destroying opponents. I was surprised that it was this close of a game, honestly. The Browns performed amazingly.
Yeah, the Browns really played good. You know, we saw Baker Mayfield play good, but he did have a crucial interception on the last drive of the game. Just getting sacked, couldn't get it fully out of bounds, threw it right to the guy, and that was the game right there. But before that, all in all, he was 21 of 28, 321 yards, no TDs. That's the only thing I think he could have done better. You know, you got to try to get some touchdown passes. But Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt combined for 3 touchdowns. Nick Chubb had 83 yards rushing. The passing game, it was a shocker. David Njoku led the team with 76 yards, 3 catches. You know, he was the backup tight end listed before the season. I think now he might have overlapped Austin Hooper in the depth chart. I think David Njoku's back. You know, he had the neck injury before. But definitely he's a sleeper this year as one of the better tight ends. I will say that. And then Jarvis Landry, he was 5 catches, 71 yards. You know, that's a pretty solid game out of him. That's about how he usually performs. And Hunt, 3 rushes, 28 yards. But He was in the passing game too, but not a lot in the passing game. But what I got from this game was the Chiefs are still the team to beat, really. You know, I just don't see a lot of teams competing in the AFC against them. Other than the Browns, I could see the Steelers and Bills beating them, really, in the playoffs. I don't know about you.
I coming into the season, I thought the Titans might be a team that might be able to do that. But after their big loss, I don't know if they're going to be one of those teams that are able to do it. I think the Ravens, we'll see this week with the Ravens, but if they are somewhat healthy going to the playoffs, if they make the playoffs, I think they might be able to compete with them. But yeah, those are really the only teams that I see competing. And even the Steelers, it's the defense that is beating teams. It's not that offense.
Yeah, I think the Steelers defense can compete with them, but that offense, Chiefs don't have a great defense, but they have some playmakers on defense with Jones and Matthew to where they do put up a fight for your offense. But let's get on to the other Sunday games before we get into our best of the weeks. You know, the first game I have is Cincinnati and Chicago. The final score ended up being, it was a pretty close, oh no, I'm sorry. It was Cincinnati and Minnesota. Cincinnati ended up pulling out and getting a 27-24 win in overtime. You know, Joe Burrow looked good in this game. Mixon looked good. It was a good offensive game for both, but ultimately it was the Bengals just came out on top, really. And then another game, Dolphins-Patriots. Dolphins came out 17-16. You know, they played okay on each side of the ball. You know, their defense stepped up. Look for the offense to try to get better. I don't know if it's their week against the Bills this week to get better, but they definitely have some room to improve on offense. Defensively, they played great. Eagles-Falcons. Eagles just blew them out of the water. Jalen Hurts looked really good. I was impressed with him. You know, Devonta Smith had that touchdown catch. Overall, solid game for the Eagles. Falcons looked awful. That's the only way I could put it.
Yeah, they looked pretty – they looked in shambles. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah. And then we had a thriller of 49ers-Lions. 49ers ended up winning 41-33. You know – Niners ran away with this one, and then Detroit just kept clawing back until the very end. I did not expect that from Detroit, but 49ers, Jimmy G threw for over 300 yards, and Eli Mitchell for 49ers had a great game. You know, expect him to be the lead back there now with Mostert gone.
Yeah, you hate to see Mostert gone, but Eli Mitchell really stepped up in his place. Lions, there's a lot of good guys there. Jared Goff put up great numbers. Williams put up great numbers. DeAndre Swift, TJ Hockenson. I wasn't expecting them to put up this fight, but they had a roaring comeback towards the end there.
Yeah, with that comeback, it leaves some doubt in my mind with the Packers this week. We'll get to that later. But the next game on the list was Cardinals and Titans. And Cardinals, 38-13 win. Oh, my God. Kyler Murray, 5 touchdowns. Chandler Jones, 5 sacks. Are you kidding me? When was the last time we saw someone week one get 5 sacks? That was amazing performance.
Yeah, that was crazy. The only thing I can think of is maybe the Titans' offensive line was more worried about J.J. Watt, but they should have been worried about Chandler Jones after the first 2 sacks and the forced fumble. So, I don't know. They can't keep letting him get by him. And he had 5 sacks and 2 forced fumbles. It still blows my mind.
Yeah, Cardinals definitely have a lot of star power there that might lead them to the division leader, really.
Hey, I did say that they're going to be the division leader, did I not?
You did. I thought it would take some time for Jones and Watt to get on the same page, you know, because when you bring in some of these new players, because they also brought in Malcolm Butler for corner, they lost Patrick Peterson, you know, that sometimes it takes time to get really in rhythm, but they came out full force. You know, great game by Arizona. I got to give it to them. And then we'll talk about their division rivals, the Seattle Seahawks. You know, they went to Indianapolis to take on the Colts. They won 28-16. You know, Russell Wilson was efficient, and he looked really good in the new offense. You know, they had, he had the deep ball, the Tyler Lockett. Overall, it was a solid game by Russell Wilson.
And yeah, Tyler Lockett had two touchdowns. DK Metcalf had a pretty decent game too, I believe. Really good game by the Seahawks. They won pretty handily, in my opinion.
Yeah, and then we'll go over to interconference game, Chargers-Washington. Chargers end up squeaking by 2016. I know that we were like, we don't know how this game's going to go because that was a tough matchup, but Herbert had a really good game, threw for 337 yards, and really, I don't know if they have Heinicke in that game the whole time. Do you think they win or lose?
I don't know. I'm debating whether Heinicke's the better quarterback over Fitzpatrick, but I think Chargers played them very well. They played good defense. They played good offense. They were able to just squeak it out 20-16. I was happy with how Herbert played, and I think Heinicke might have been able to make a statement win there if he played the full game, but he didn't. So
over to Panthers Jets. Darnold gets his revenge, 19-14 win right there. You know, Carolina really led this game throughout. You know, Zach Wilson didn't look great. He didn't look terrible though. I just don't think the Jets are ready to make that next level jump. But I do think Carolina can be competitive this year in the NFC.
I was a little disappointed with how Carolina played. I was expecting them to win by more. They barely edged it out over them. I was expecting a bigger game from Robbie Anderson, but a win's a win. So I bet they're happy at the end of the day. So,
yeah, win's a win. That's right. And then we had the Houston Texans taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars, 37-21 victory for Houston. I did not expect this much offense in this game. You know, Tyrod Taylor really let the ball air out. Brandon Cooks, 5 catches, 132 yards. Don't expect this to happen that many games this year. I will say that. But they do face Jacksonville one more time, so you never know.
How do you like Trevor Lawrence this week?
You know, he had 3 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. It's a rookie performance, really. I'm not going to be like, oh, he's not the answer. It's just 1 week. Just give him some time. I think let him develop. I think he'll be a great quarterback in the league. And then we talked about the Giants earlier. You know, they are 0-2. They lost to the Broncos 27-13. Teddy Two Gloves. He let the ball air out a little bit, threw 2 touchdown passes. And really, that defense for the Giants just couldn't hold the Broncos down. And then the Sunday night game, the Rams versus the Bears, and the Rams dominated this one, 34-14. Stafford led the Rams, and I don't know about you, but Matthew Stafford looked really good in that LA offense. Do you think they make a run for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as kings of the NFC this year?
I think they might. Him and Cooper Kupp, they connected for a lot of yards, and I was very happy with Matthew Stafford's performance. I think this is the happiest he's ever been, honestly. Like, he's finally got a team that values him and is using him the right way. I mean, getting away from that Lions team, anybody would be happy, but he's on an amazing team, and I think they're going to do great things this year.
Detroit to LA, you got to love it, really.
Yes.
Now that we recapped all the games, let's talk about who we thought some of the best were. You know, we got some different categories. We got NFC Offensive Player of the Week, NFC Defensive Player of the Week, NFC Rookie of the Week, Team of the Week, and then the same thing for the AFC. So who did you think was the NFC Offensive Player of the Week?
NFC Offensive Player of the Week. I got to go with my man Amari Cooper for the Cowboys. He had 13 receptions, 139 yards, and 2 TDs, 2 freaking touchdowns. He had a great game. Dak had a great game. That whole Cowboys team had a great game. They almost beat the reigning Super Bowl champion. So I really liked what Amari Cooper did. He's my NFC player, the offensive player of the week.
Yeah, he definitely solidified himself as one of the best wide receivers in the game right now. I think he could be in for a very special season there in Dallas. For me, for offensive player of the week, I went with the little football baby, Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray put on a great performance week one, 21 for 32, 65 completion percentage, 289 yards, 5 touchdowns, 1 on the ground. You know, you can't really ask much more, and they dominated. I can't believe that Tennessee came out and played like that, really.
I love that D-hop, toe-tap magic. Oh, my God, that was a great touchdown.
Yeah, and him and Christian Kirk, oh, my God. You know, Kyler Murray's got some targets there. I think you're right with he'll have a great season. I don't know about MVP, but it could happen. I will say that. And then for defensive player of the week, for me, it was pretty easy. I stayed with Arizona. I went with Chandler Jones, 5 sacks, a couple forced fumbles. I mean, who's playing better than that on defense?
Yeah, I don't think I could even try to name a better defensive player this week. He had 6 total tackles. Like you said, 5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles. He was a key player in this matchup and really helped them destroy the Titans.
Now that we talked about offensive and defensive player of the week, how about we switch it to rookie of the week for the NFC?
A rookie that I was not expecting to do good. I wasn't expecting him to play, honestly. Mostert out injured for the rest of the year again. Eli Mitchell really stepped up in his place. 104 rushing yards, a touchdown, and 19 attempts. He almost got 20 attempts. That's exactly what you want as a running back. That's a very run heavy offense, and he had 104 rushing yards. You can't complain with that. That's your first week. That's great for him.
Yeah. Overall, I don't think anyone saw him stepping up like that. We thought Mostert was the back. He goes down. We usually think running back by committee, but he really took over. Good for him. My rookie of the week player was Devonta Smith for Philly. He had 6 catches on 8 targets, 71 yards, and he had a touchdown where he caught the ball in the same exact spot as he did in the national championship game, right in the same dome. So that's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool moment right there.
Yeah, I completely agree. He did great for the Dolphins, or Eagles, my bad. Let's go on to the team of the week. I had the Saints. They had an amazing win over the Packers. That was a very statement win. Like, who expected them to even beat the Packers, let alone crush them, hold them to 3 points? Who do you got?
I also agree that New Orleans might be team of the week, but I ultimately stuck with Arizona. I took the Cardinals just because, they look just as dominant as the Saints. Tennessee's no easy team as well, but both of those teams really stepped up, and I definitely see being the two better teams for the rest of the year. Let's switch over to the other side, AFC. For the offensive player of the week, I had Derek Carr. He put on a performance against the Ravens, leads the league in passing yards after 1 week. And I don't know if they're going to be contenders this year or fakers, but Derek Carr definitely had a week. I will say that.
For me, this was an amazing performance. I mean, Chiefs are always going to do amazing, but Tyreek Hill, he had 11 receptions, 197 yards, 1 touchdown. That's amazing stats. You can't make this stuff up. His teammate Travis Kelce, he had 2 touchdowns of his own. They both did great, but I had to give it to Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, Hill, the cheetah, man. He's special, I will say that. But let's switch over to defense. Who was your defensive player of the week for the AFC?
I was liking the Raiders' Max Crosby. He had 6 tackles, 2 sacks, and he had 2 assists. No one stood out to me as much as Chandler Jones in the NFC, but Max Crosby had a great game for himself in week 1.
Yeah, I think he had a really great week because he stepped up for that Raiders defense. No one thought that they were going to play that great, but he really put some pressure on Lamar, and he showed that, you know, if you get to Lamar, he's an average quarterback, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then my AFC Defensive Player of the Week wears the black and yellow Steelers colors, baby. And I went with T.J. Watt. You know, he had a couple sacks, forced fumble, played against a great offense, got the job done, and he made a statement there after getting paid.
Yeah, he didn't practice much at all during the preseason, but clearly shows he doesn't need the practice. He's that good. So,
yeah, I mean, when you play like that, you really need practice. But for the rookie of the week, who'd you have for the AFC?
I had Ja'Marr Chase. Apparently, the NFL balls are just as easy to catch as the college balls, I guess, because he had 5 receptions with 101 yards and a touchdown. So I was very impressed with his outing. I wasn't expecting much from him this year after that comment that he made and a couple drops in the preseason, but he did great.
Yeah, I think he was just fooling everyone. He was like, oh, I don't know if I can catch these balls. No, he knew. He knew he was doing what he was doing. He knew this would happen week one. But I also took a receiver for Rookie of the Week, and I went with Jalen Waddle. You know, Jalen Waddle had 4 catches, 5 targets, 61 yards, and a touchdown. And the touchdown ended up being the last touchdown of the game for the Dolphins and ultimately put them ahead of the Patriots for the rest of the game. So I do think Jalen Waddle is a player to look out for next week because – they're going to have to get the ball out quick and expect Jalen Waddle to have a lot of slant and drag routes where he's getting the ball and he's running right after. He could have a big game.
First of all, that's got to be sad for you as a Patriots fan. My prayers are out to you, but hey, yeah, you're right. He had a great game. I was very happy with how he performed. I definitely see great things for him this season.
Yeah. You know, nothing you could do about the game. You just got to move forward. But let's get into our Sunday picks for this week. You know, I don't
What about the team of the week?
All right. What was your team of the week for the AFC?
You got to go Steelers. I was not expecting them to win at all. It's hard as a fan to go to a stadium, an away stadium, pretty much knowing your team's going to lose and still repping the gear. And then watching them pull out the win, that was amazing. I couldn't have asked for a better game, and they're my team of the week.
Yeah, my team of the week was pretty simple. I'm pretty sure most of America agrees. It was the Chiefs. You know, they got the comeback win. I don't think anyone's beating them in the AFC right now as the top dog when it comes to the playoffs. But now that we got team of the week out of the way, let's look at our Sunday picks for week 2. You know, I don't know how we did on week 1. We definitely didn't get all of them right, but we didn't get all of them wrong. So it's a good week for improvement, we'll say, for week 2. With that said, first game, Cincinnati-Chicago. Who do you have winning this one?
I got Chicago Bears. I think they're the better overall team. I wasn't expecting the Bengals to pull the win out week 1, but they did. I got the Bears. I think Montgomery's going to have a great game against that defensive line. Yeah, Bears. How about you?
I'm the opposite. I went Cincinnati on this one. I think it's a toss-up, but Burrow played well, and I think he shows that he's back. But he's got his weapons, and that Chicago pass defense did not look good at all against the Rams. I expect for Tyler Boyd, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins to have some big games this week. I do think the run defense and the blitz might get to Burrow, but I definitely could see him pulling it off. And for the next game, Houston-Cleveland. I think this one's pretty no-brainer. Cleveland gets his first win. Look for Chubb and Hunt to both have great games. What about you?
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy. Browns. They should win, although I said there was a lot of easy games last week, and they weren't so easy. I said the Packers-Saints game was easy. I could not have been far more wrong. Like, I could not have been more wrong. It was
You weren't wrong. It was easy for the Saints, though, not the Packers.
Yes, but yeah, I got Browns winning this game all day. So next up, we got Rams Colts. I got Rams. That offense looked amazing. The defense looks amazing. I don't see anything wrong with this team.
Yeah, I got the Rams winning this one too. They look good on both sides of the football. And that Colts offense, I didn't think looked that great against a Seattle team that doesn't have a great defense. I don't think Carson Wentz is the answer. And expect the Rams wide receivers to have a great game again. The Colts secondary is not that good. And then another game, Buffalo-Miami. You know, divisional game, it could go either way. But I ended up choosing Buffalo. I think they're going to come out with a vengeance, and they might tear up this Miami passing offense. You never know. But ultimately, I don't think Miami's offense is strong enough against that Bills defense. You know, Tua did not play that good against New England, and I think the Bills and New England's defense are very similar, so expecting to have a very average game again.
Yeah, I'm expecting the Bills to have a statement game. They were expecting an easy win week one. Now it's week two, and they're 0-1. So I think Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen, they're going to step up big for their team, and I think they're going to win pretty handily over the Dolphins.
Yeah, and then I'm going to keep it in the same division. We got New England versus New York Jets. Who do you have for this one?
This is another one that I think should be pretty easy. I think the Patriots should definitely win, but you never know. It's a division game. It could be a pretty close game, but I think the Patriots should beat the Jets. What do you think?
I also have New England winning. You know, I do think that defense is going to be too strong for Zach Wilson. It's better than the one in Carolina. And Bill Belichick always knows how to coach against first-year quarterbacks or quarterbacks that are facing him for the first time. So I think New England's going to win this one pretty handily. I don't know the score, but I do think Mac Jones will have a good game like he did last week.
Next up, we got 49ers-Eagles. I think that this could be a sneaky one. I think the Eagles could win, but I got the 49ers winning this game. I still am not in love with the Eagles team, but let's just say I wouldn't be surprised if they had a little sneak attack and won that game.
Yeah, I also was like, man, is Philly that good? But then I was like, oh, wait, they face Atlanta. You know, Atlanta's a big step up or step down from San Fran. I think that defense is going to be too much for Jalen Hurts. And I do think they're going to play strong on both sides of the ball, San Fran. I got San Fran pulling it out.
Next up, Steelers, Raiders. I got to go with my team, Steelers. I doubted them week one. I can't doubt them again. And I think the Raiders are a lot worse than the Bills. So if the Steelers can beat the Bills, I think that they'll be able to beat the Raiders. How about you?
Yeah, you know, Vegas played really the medical team of the league with every Raven that was good went to IR. But I don't expect another Cinderella story where Vegas pulls it out. I think Pittsburgh's defense will be too much. And ultimately, the Ravens ran really well against the Raiders with a running back that wasn't even probably supposed to see snaps this year. So I do expect Najee Harris to have a good game, like I said earlier. But I do think they can get the passing game going, unlike in Buffalo. I do think Deontay Johnson and I think Claypool is going to have a way better game than he did in Buffalo.
Next up, we got the Broncos and Jags. After last week's performance, losing to maybe the worst team in the league and the Texans, I got the Broncos winning this game.
Yeah, I think easily it's the Broncos. You know, they played solid on both sides of the ball last week. And I think Teddy Two Gloves, you know, we doubted him a little bit. But I think Teddy Two Gloves is going to have a great year in Denver if he keeps it up.
Next up, Saints-Panthers. This is a game that a week ago I would have gone Panthers, but after last week's amazing performance over the Packers, I got the Saints winning this one. That defense has shown that they're here to play. They're one of the best defenses in the league. I think they're going to beat the Panthers.
Yeah, I agree. New Orleans defense is going to be too strong for Carolina and Sam Darnold. And I expect Sean Payton to coach another great game. And then the next game on schedule, Arizona, Minnesota. Personally, I have the Cardinals just dominating with Kyler Murray having another big week. I don't think Minnesota's defense is going to be able to hold up against them. And with the way it's looking with Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt, you know, Kirk Cousins might be in for a rough week.
I completely agree. I think the Cardinals are going to destroy the Vikings. They showed last week that they're going to be one of the better teams in the league, and I like them a lot. Like I said, I have them at the top of that division, and I picked them for a reason. So Cardinals over the Vikings pretty easily. Next up, we got the Bucks and the Falcons. Wow, Tom Brady is going to have a field day this week. My goodness. The Bucks are going to absolutely destroy the Falcons. You saw last week how the Eagles handled the Falcons. These are the Super Bowl champions. What are they going to do to them?
As Antonio Brown would say, business is booming in Tampa Bay. And that's going to be a lopsided game, no doubt. Tampa Bay is winning that one easily. It's just going to be a blowout, really. I don't have anything else to say about that one.
Yeah, I'm happy that I got some Buccaneers players on my team for fantasy. Let's say that. Next up, we got the Chargers and the Cowboys. This is one of those close games. I think it's going to be a very offensive battle. I got the Chargers over the Cowboys just because I don't know how I feel about the Cowboys' defense. They did do very well against the Buccaneers, but I think the Chargers are going to have a really good game, and they're going to beat them.
Yeah, I agree. I think LA is going to pull this one out. You know, Justin Herbert is going to throw great, I think, with losing DeMarcus Lawrence, losing Randy Gregory. Those are big losses for the Cowboys this week. And I do think Dak's going to keep him in the game. It's definitely, like you said, it's going to be a shootout. I do think Dallas can walk away with it, but I just think, you know, the Chargers defense is this much better. So I just have Herbert over taking the edge really for the Chargers.
Next up is Seahawks Titans. I got to go Seahawks. I don't like how the Titans performed at all last week. I mean, the Cardinals defense picked them apart. The Seahawks defense is not nearly as good, but I think Russell Wilson, he can throw with the best of them. He's going to air them out to DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett all day. So I got Seahawks.
Yeah, I do think it's going to be a good game. It definitely could go either way, like the one we said before. But Tennessee looks like they took a step back from what they've been doing the past couple of years. You know, they did not look good at all. But I can see Seattle burning them in the passing game and just Metcalf and Lockett having big games, really. And maybe even Chris Carson if you add him into the mix for the passing game. But if the Titans do pull this one out, it's going to be through Derrick Henry, I believe. You know, Seattle's run defense isn't that great, but it's not that bad too, but their passing game's not great. They're an average defense, but I just think Seattle's going to win this one.
Yeah, expect a good game from Derrick Henry. But Chiefs, Ravens, Ravens lost to the Raiders. I got the Chiefs this week, and Chiefs beat the Browns team, which I think that's probably the best team in the NFC or the AFC North. So an injured Ravens team, they're hobbled. I don't think they're going to be able to beat the Chiefs. The Chiefs offense is going to run all over them. Not run, but like they're going to throw all over them, I guess I should say instead.
They might be doing it either way. They're just going to pick apart this team like it's nothing, you know. They have so many injuries, and they have more players that might not play with Humphrey not playing. There goes your two best corners now with Peters and Humphrey gone. Kansas City's going to dominate. That's all he can say. You know, Lamar can try all he wants, but he needs some help there if he wants to beat anyone, especially the Chiefs.
Next up, we got the Packers-Lions. I don't know if I can pick the Packers. I will pick the Packers, but I'm scared to pick the Packers. Lions performed very well last week. They scored a lot more points than what the Packers scored. But, hey, the Packers face the Saints. I think the Packers, they need a win. They're going to pull out a win this week. What do you think?
You know, it's a Monday night game. You don't know what happens on Monday night games. You never know. We've seen the Packers lose Monday night games before with the Seahawks a while back with it was interception. It was a touchdown, same call. But with that said, like I said last week, I do believe in miracles. And I think we will see a miracle in Detroit winning this week. You know, I think Detroit's offense, you know, they got down early, but they ended up playing really well. And the Packers just lost to Darius Smith. He's on IR. And that offensive line is in shambles right now. I see Detroit pulling this one out. Close game behind Swift.
Okay, I like it. I like the bold prediction. I like this one better than the Browns-Chiefs one last week. You were very close on that one.
It's close.
I think you might be able to get this one with all the injuries the Packers have. And
I was right for three quarters, okay? I needed that last quarter. That's it.
I completely agree. Okay, now let's move on to fantasy football.
Yeah, so Zach and I faced each other this week for fantasy, and let's just say I didn't show up week one, and I lost terribly. I put up like 105 points, and my leading scorer was probably CeeDee Lamb. Zeke didn't do a lot for me. I played Ronald Jones. I benched Rob Gronkowski for Noah Fant. I benched Mike Williams at the last second. He goes off. Not a good week for me. Zach, you can tell everyone how great your team did.
Yeah. I pulled up the stats. I gotta be happy for my team, you know. So I won 173.76 to 105.4. That's almost 70 points, by the way. But
yeah, we know.
Okay, so Jalen Hurts, he outperformed Josh Allen. He got 28 points. Josh Allen got 17. Stephon Diggs, he did decent. He got 15.9 for me. But like you said, CeeDee Lamb, he had a great game, 23.4. Tyler Lockett, he had a great game, 26 points. Deontay Johnson, 14.6. That juggling touchdown catch really helped you there. He would have had like 8 points for you. Sterling Shepard had a great game. Like I said, he's emerging as that number one receiver there as long as Kenny Galladay keeps taking those defenders. He got 24 points. You had Mecole Hardman. He had less than 5 points.
Yeah, I know.
Austin Eckler, he didn't do too amazing. He got 11 points, but doesn't matter when you have Zeke, who scored under 6.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I had David Montgomery. He had close to 19 points. Another underperformer for you, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, 10 points. TJ Hockenson, he had a great week. I think he's going to do great for them. He's generating like all the freaking targets there. He has almost 26 points. You had Noah Fant, 12.2. If you had Rob Gronkowski, he could have had 29. It could have looked a lot different. But next up, I had Mike Davis. He didn't do too hot, 10 points. You had Miles Gaskins. He did better. He got 12 points. Jacoby Myers, 10.5 points. Ronald Jones, negative 0.6. It's okay. It's okay. Buffalo, they got 2 points. In New England, they got 5. So
okay. Is it? You're just kicking me while I'm down right now, Zach. I'll remember this when we face off again, okay?
Isn't that the best time to kick them when they're down?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not. I'll remember this one, Zach. Wait till the next time we play.
Yeah, hopefully next time you'll be able to do the same thing to me. Okay, let's go over some starts and sits for this week. Who do you think should start?
For me, I'll start out with quarterback. It's my boy Teddy Two Gloves. Teddy throws about Teddy Bridgewater. You know, he dropped 264 yards and 2 tutties against a tough Giants defense on the road, and he's going to find it easier to connect with his versatile targets on the road again, even though he's missing Jerry Jeudy. Hopefully he finds some other targets like Cortland Sutton and KJ Hamler.
KJ Hamler, Penn State legend, had to say it. For my quarterback to start, Justin Herbert. He's playing the Cowboys this should be a high scoring game, first of all. And there's going to be, so there's going to be tons of points scored, and it's Dallas defense. I think he's going to do great this week. Like, imagine 350 yards, three touchdowns. He's probably going to run for like 40 yards too, just out of nowhere. He's going to scramble for 40 yards. I'm predicting it.
Yeah, I do think you're right. You got to start him. I think either one of those quarterbacks, really, him and Dak or Herbert's going to have good games. But for running back, who'd you have?
I had Miles Sanders. I wasn't too sure about him coming into week one. It was like a running back by committee, they said it was going to be. He got 15 attempts and five targets. He got most of the team's reps. He did pretty well for him. I think he's going to have a good week this week. Definitely start him.
Yeah, I think that's a solid start. For me, I had Damian Harris for New England. You know, he's a strong running back and put up 100 yards last week against the Miami defense. He did have the fumble, which you don't know how Belichick's going to react to running backs who fumble, but he's definitely the best back in that running back room, and I expect him to dominate the New York Jets like he did last year.
For wide receiver, I got Keenan Allen, another Charger. Like I said, bad Cowboys defense. Justin Herbert's going to have a great game. If Justin Herbert's having a great game, I think Keenan Allen's having a great game. So I don't think you can go wrong with starting Keenan Allen.
Yeah, I do think Keenan Allen's going to have a good matchup against Dallas secondary, where maybe you can even play for them at this point. But for me at wide receiver, you know, me and Antonio Brown, we're calling God this Sunday, and business is booming as usual. He's facing Atlanta. He's in the slot. He's going to score a lot of points, I think, this week. I don't know the exact number, but he's facing one of the worst pass defenses in the NFL, and expect some big plays like he had last year.
Is he going to put up a 30 bomb?
Maybe. You never know. I'll leave it over under 25. I'll leave it at that.
The only thing that is worrying me about him is just because there's like three other targets in that offense. But can they all score 20 plus points? Maybe.
You never know.
Three of them did last week. So yeah, there's a good chance. And this is a worse team. So
Mike Evans is still missing right now. So I don't know where he is. Yeah. We might not see him at game time.
Yeah. For tight end, yeah, his Antonio Brown's teammate, Rob Gronkowski. Awful Falcons defense. Gronkowski had an amazing game last week, 29 points. For some reason he was sitting on someone's bench, but he's going to have a great game this week.
You know, after watching Brady and Gronk for years now with New England and Tampa Bay, it's always Gronk getting into play in shape form, okay? I didn't think week one he was going to come out and score, 29 points? That doesn't happen usually. That was like 5-6 years ago, Gronk. Okay. I don't know what it is. I don't know what's down in Florida that's making him do it, but don't worry. He's going to start this week for me. But for me, my tight end, if you don't have him now, I suggest picking him up. It's David Njoku. Big part of the offense last week. Look for him to be one of the top targets for tight ends.
Next up, we got sits for my quarterback. I got Derek Carr. He had a great game last week, but he's facing a Steelers defense that handled Josh Allen very well. And if we're talking about who's better, I think Josh Allen might be his top three, top five quarterbacks. Derek Carr, he's very serviceable, but I wouldn't put him in even in the top 10 conversation. So I think he should be respected more as a top quarterback, but he's just not nearly as good as Josh Allen. And if the Steelers can handle him that well, I think they'll be able to handle Derek Carr very well as well.
Yeah, the Steelers defense is no joke. Just like the Cardinals pass rush, for me, sitting this week is Kirk Cousins. That offensive line let him down in a lot of key moments last week in Cincinnati. And now they have Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt to worry about. I can't name you one player off the top of my head on the Cincinnati defensive line or ends that got to Kirk Cousins. So with Chandler Jones coming off 5 sacks, I'm expecting another big game for him.
Next up, we got running back. I hate to do this. He's on my fantasy team. I think I have to start him because I have no bench depth at all. It's Mike Davis. Atlanta's going to be down most of the game, so his game script isn't going to be very well. Atlanta's going to be throwing the ball a lot. And the Bucks defense, it's very well. They held Zeke in check. If they can hold Zeke in check, I think they're going to hold Mike Davis very well. It really depends on what the game plan is for Atlanta, but if I was Atlanta, my game plan would be to throw the ball, not to run it. What do you think?
You know, I agree. You know, Atlanta's not going to be running the ball a lot because they're going to be down by so much. But for my running back, it was Darrell Henderson. You know, he got a touchdown last week, and he did better in the second half, but it was a really slow start where he didn't get most of his yards till the fourth quarter. I wouldn't be surprised if he is like a Chris Carson-like game against the Colts.
For tight end, I don't know if anybody has this guy, but if you do, don't start him. It's Eric Ebron. Steelers have four targets that are prioritized ahead of him, maybe even five. They got Pat Freiermuth, Penn State legend, in the draft, and he had a great reception last week. I could see him being a better option in the receiving game for the Steelers than Eric Ebron. But like I said, they have tons of options ahead of him. Najee Harris is going to see some targets. Juju Smith-Schuster, Chase Claypool, Deontay Johnson, James Washington might even get in there. When there's that many targets ahead of him, you can't start him. Ben Roethlisberger isn't going to throw the ball 60 times.
Yeah, I don't know how Ebron's still like ranked for like, oh yeah, he's a good draft pick this year. We've been saying that for a while now, and I just think there's too many people in Pittsburgh, like you said, where his targets are going elsewhere. For me, it was a Penn State guy, Mike Gesicki. You know, his role is almost at rock bottom in Miami, I feel like. I want to say he had like three targets last week, zero catches. From what he had with Fitzpatrick to what Tua, just Tua's not a – he's not his target for Tua, I'll say that. But you never know. I don't recommend starting him this week, though. For wide receiver, mine was Robbie Anderson. I don't think Sam Darnold is – going to play that good against the Saints. If he does, it's going to be a lot of checkdowns to McCaffrey. And I don't think the big play is going to be there where Anderson's going to have to come up with the ball. And he didn't even get a lot of target against the Jets.
For me, for my wide receiver, I got Christian Kirk. If you have to start him, start him. I like him a lot, but at the same time, I hate him because he's a boomer bust. He has a ton of potential, but he could also put up a goose egg. The Vikings, I think he could have a really good game against the Vikings, but he could also do god-awful against the Vikings. So I'm just worried about him. I wouldn't start him. I think he's a headache. If you could be waiting all game for him to get that one big play, and I'd rather not have to worry the whole game. I'd rather get a player that has more target potential, and, yeah, I wouldn't start him.
I agree with you there. With all that said, with our starting and sit-ums, let's now talk about who we think the best performer at each position is going to be this week. Where would you like to start? What position do you want to start with?
I'll go a quarterback. I think Tom Brady's going to be the top performer this week. He's going against the Falcons. He's got tons of targets. He could basically pass it up to anybody and they're going to catch it. So I think it'd be pretty tough to find a better option than Tom Brady, but what do you got?
For me, I have Dak Prescott being the best quarterback this week, just because he's going to have a good game script of always being in the game and having to throw the ball. And he could easily put up another 400-yard game.
I completely agree. On the wide receiver, I got Tyler Lockett. I think he's going to have a great game. Russell Wilson threw him two touchdowns last week. I'd like to see the same this week. He's going against the Titans defense. Or is he going against the Colts? He went against the Colts last week. He's going against the Titans this week. I don't like the Titans secondary at all. I think Tyler Lockett's going to blow him in the water, and He's look for big plays by him. I could see a couple 50-yard catches, maybe a touchdown or two in there.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Tyler Lockett, you know, he's one of those guys where, like, he has those really big games like he did against the Cardinals. And I definitely do see that happening against the Titans. For me, my wide receiver, you know, it's one of Tom's favorite targets, Chris Godwin, former Penn State guy. I think he's going to get a ton of catches. He had a lot of catches in week one, and I think he's going to have a couple touchdowns this week.
On to running back, I think it's going to be Nick Chubb on the Browns. He's going against Houston, who I think Nick Chubb's going to run all over them. I could see 150 yards, three touchdowns. I could see it. Who do you got?
For me, I was thinking of Chubb and Hunt both getting over 100 yards. I think that can easily happen. But I ultimately went with DeAndre Swift. Just because, you know, Za'Darius Smith's out, that Packers' run defense has never been that good. And he plays a role in both the passing and run game. You know, he had a 40-yard touchdown pass last week, which I'm sorry to everyone when I said bench him. I did not expect him to have that touchdown last week. But I do think he'll be crucial for the Lions if they do get that win.
Yeah, as you said, you think they're going to win the game, and he's a key piece in that, in their offense. If they win, he's most likely going to have a big game. On a tight end, I think it's going to be Travis Kelce. Tyreek Hill had the big game for the Chiefs last week. I think Ravens are going to be a little bit more cautious with Hill, and that's going to lead to Travis Kelce getting a lot more open targets. And I mean, will he be open? No, but he's going to get tons of targets and he's going to have a great game.
Yeah, I was thinking Kelce or Waller for best of the week, but Kelce, I don't know when they're going to start running the ball a lot for Kansas City, because they could be up in the first half by God knows how many points, and then next thing you know, they're just running the ball the rest of the game. And then Waller, I do think he's going to get shut down by that Pittsburgh defense just because he's the only target. So you can really throw any of your corners on there, and the other ones will take over for receivers. But ultimately for me, for tight end, I went TJ Hockenson just because he's a big part of that Detroit offense, and he's Jared Goff's best target. And we saw Jared Goff put up a lot of yards last week, and he had two touchdowns last week. I do think he can perform a lot better against a little bit worse of a defense.
Okay, now that we went over who we think this week's top performers are going to be, let's talk about last week's top performers. Last week for quarterback, it was Kyler Murray. He had 34.5 points. Like I said, he's going to put up MVP numbers. For wide receiver, it was Amari Cooper, 38.9. Tyreek Hill was pretty close behind him, but Amari Cooper had the two touchdowns, so that's what pushed him ahead. And for running back, it was Christian McCaffrey. He had 27.7. This guy does it so quietly. Like, you don't even hear about him putting up amazing points. You just expect it at this point. And then for tight end, sitting on someone's bench, I don't know whose, Rob Gronkowski, 29 points.
I'll talk about it, okay? I had a painful weekend between New England, my fantasy team. It wasn't good. I put it
behind. At least Michigan won. And as we're talking about Michigan, let's go on to college football. Let's talk the AP poll. Yeah. Oregon, they jumped up 2-4 from 12. They jumped up 8 spots. Yeah. What do you think about that?
Yeah, Oregon had a statement win against Ohio State, going to Ohio State, and they were ahead most of the game. They really, I don't want to say dominated the game, but they definitely were ahead most of the game and showed that they were the better team.
Next up, Iowa. They beat Iowa State. They jumped to 5 from 10. What do you think about that game?
You know, I was not expecting either of the Iowas to be this good this year, but I think it's a little different change of pace. For Iowa to be in top 5, that's a pretty big deal. You know, usually we see the usuals like Clemson, who is 6, but you still got Bama, you got Oklahoma, and then you got Georgia. It's all – there's some SEC, but it's good seeing Iowa in there for a change of pace.
Yeah, I think that was a very big jump. I think they deserved it, though. It'll be nice to see a different team in the mix. Okay, next, Ohio State. They were at 3. After that loss to Oregon, they dropped down to 9. They dropped 6 spots. What do you think about that big drop?
You know, I do expect the big drop just because that's where – I think Oregon was around that same spot last week, so it does make sense. But they did put them 1 spot ahead of Penn State, another Big Ten team. I do think they did that purposely. But I do think out of the two, Ohio State is the better team just because, you know, Oregon's a tough task, and I don't know if even Penn State would have beat them.
I mean, hey, Ohio State barely beat Minnesota week 1, and then they lost week 2. So, I don't know.
But Penn State barely won week 1 against Wisconsin.
Wisconsin was a ranked team as well. Okay.
And then they played, what, Ball State? So, is that really a competitive game right there where we can rank them up?
It's not a competitive game. They only moved up 1 spot, and I understand why. I would have liked to see them move ahead of Ohio State. But, hey, they play Auburn this week, and I think if they win that, they could move up quite a bit. Auburn's ranked, like, 22, I think. So now Notre Dame, they won a game, yet somehow they dropped down to 12 from 8. What do you think about that?
I think it's reasonable. You know, they almost lost to Toledo.
I completely agree. That's the team that Penn State actually was able to jump, thankfully. But another team that was able to jump this week was UCLA. They jumped from 13, or they jumped to 13 from 16. What do you think about them?
Yeah, I do think it's definitely a good job by UCLA this year so far. You know, they had the big LSU win. I think, you know, Chip Kelly came to the NFL and then kind of fizzled out. He didn't really succeed in the NFL. And then it's taken a while for that UCLA program to turn around. But he has been a very successful coach in college before. I definitely could see this team ranked for the rest of the year.
Now, two teams that weren't ranked previously, but they're ranked this week. Arkansas, they're 22. And your Michigan's top 25, baby. They're 25 right now. With a couple wins, I could see them moving up pretty easily. Michigan State also got some votes, so got to show Big Ten love there. What do you think about Michigan getting to the top 25?
Yeah, they beat Western Michigan and Washington. Washington was ranked earlier in the year, but they played today against Northern Illinois and had a pretty big statement win, but I don't see them beating the big teams this year. They never do. I just don't think they have the talent this year. They may shock me, but all in all, they'll hover around 25 this year.
Yeah, I'm scared for them because their best player, he got injured in the first game. I was sad to see him off. I thought he was going to have a great game or a great season, but, yeah, he's out.
Yeah, and then, like you said earlier, we have Auburn Penn State tonight. You face the legend of Bo Nix this week. Are you scared of this matchup? What do you think is going to happen tonight?
It's the whiteout. Will Bo Nix be able to perform in what might be one of college football's biggest traditions? I don't know, but I've been to my fair share of whiteout games, and you told me earlier we're only 6-6, which I had to say half the time we're facing Ohio State. That's and true. we're not beating Ohio State, but Auburn, they're a different team. I think Penn State could definitely beat them. Penn State lives and dies with their defense. So if the defense performs well, I think we could very easily win this game. Sean Clifford looked for a few big plays. Hopefully he hits Dotson deep. Like I said last week, he missed them a few times, and that led to them barely beating Wisconsin. But I think they could definitely beat Auburn this week.
Yeah, I definitely could see either team pulling it out. I think it's going to be a great game. But now that we talked all about football, let's switch over to another sport, the MLB. And right now we got some wild card races that are heating up here.
Oh, they are wild, some might say.
Like the Wild West out here.
But, it's actually the Wild East, in my opinion, because Red Sox, Yankees, Blue Jays, my goodness, they are all within a game in the wild card.
Yeah.
Red Sox are up a half game. Yankees have that second spot, although they're about to lose today. So it is what it is. Blue Jays are a half game back. They're about to take it as long as they can win today. Oakland, 2.5 back, and Mariners, 3.5 back. What do you think about the wild card standings?
Yeah, right now, like you said, it's Red Sox, Yankees, and then Blue Jays. I think those are the three. It's going to be a combination of the three. I don't see anyone else getting in, really. But where they place, I don't know. I think it's a toss-up. I'll take back what I said. I definitely could see Oakland squeaking in, but it would take a lot. But Yankees, they're going to lose this one today against Cleveland. Red Sox, they're up 9-3 right now. They might win. Blue Jays are up 4-2 at the end of the fourth, so you never know. But as of this week, I do think it will be Red Sox and Blue Jays. Just because I believe the Red Sox and Yankees face each other this week. I could be wrong, but let me look right now. They face them next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Red Sox face Baltimore for the rest of the week, and then they face the Mets. So that's a pretty easy schedule if you do want to play someone or for a wild card.
Yankees are facing Cleveland and then Texas. So
yeah,
that's also pretty easy. They both have pretty easy schedules down the stretch. But now let's talk about the NL wild card. We got the Dodgers. They're sitting pretty at the top. They're 16 games up on the Cardinals. The Cardinals took it. I'm speechless. I was not expecting the Cardinals to take it. I was expecting Padres, Reds. And my Padres, who I predicted to get it, they're not even the next team. It's the Reds. They're a game back. And then it's the Padres, 1.5 games back. Phillies, they're 2.5 back. They're still in the mix of things. But, hey, I counted the Cardinals out. Maybe the Phillies can make a run too. I don't know. What do you think?
I told you about the Cardinals. I said they can sneak in there, and they are right now. Do they hold on to it? Who knows? But one shocking thing I think you're going to see, I think you're going to see Philly take over the division over Atlanta. And I definitely do see Philly getting in. But for the wild card, I do think I don't think Padres are getting in. I don't. I think the Reds and Cardinals are playing some good baseball, and San Diego's got some tough teams.
So I do have a question. If the Phillies do take the division, do you think the Braves will be able to take the wild card?
Let me look real quick at the Braves' exact record, just because I want to get everything right here. I would say that they could. I wouldn't say it's 100%. I'd say it's a 50-50 toss-up. It could go either way if they go for a wild card.
I will say it is the Braves' division to lose. They're two games up right now. They'd have to go on a pretty bad skid to give it up to the Phillies, but Phillies definitely have a chance. Bryce Harper is really leading the team. He had a home run the other night. He's really making a race at that MVP. So,
yeah,
I'm liking the Phillies. I hope that they do well. I always like to see Bryce Harper do well.
And Phillies have won three straight right now. And when it comes down to it, if they are competing for the division title, they do have one more series against each other. And if the Phillies sweep them, they may take it.
I completely agree. Now on to the West. Giants and Dodgers. They both clinched their playoff berth. What do you think about that?
I'm shocked it came this late with the way they're playing. I mean, but no, all in all, I think those are the two teams to beat out West, really. I don't see either. It's going to be either them. It's going to be one of those two to win the NL, really.
I could see the Brewers coming in, but like you said, these two teams are unbelievable. I still can't believe the Giants are doing as well as they are. I feel like I'm saying this every single week, but it's really unbelievable. Like I've never seen a team this bad do this good. But clearly they're not bad, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're underestimating them, but they are two games ahead of the Dodgers right now and are four games from winning their 100th game. Do you see them getting the 100 games first or the Dodgers?
Of course. Every single 10 days or 20 days, I see Giants, first team to 70 wins, first team to 80 wins. Of course they're going to be the first team to 100 wins. They have to be. They're setting records. I actually don't know if they're setting records, but they're doing great baseball right now, and you can't complain. On to a very interesting story. Have you heard about this? Starling Marte is not going to win the batting title, but he's got the best batting average. What do you think about that?
You know, I do think it's a little highway robbery for him just because, you know, if you're one of the best hitters in baseball, you should be recognized. He's not going to have enough plate appearances for each league, right? Is that what they're saying?
So, yeah, he's batting 317 right now. And to qualify as the batting champion in each league, you need to have 502 plate appearances for either league. So he started the season with the Miami Marlins, but he was traded halfway through. And because he was injured, he never got to that 502 plate appearances for them. So he's traded halfway through. He's on the Athletics now, an American League team, and he's definitely not going to be able to amass 502 plate appearances for them. So while he's got a 317 batting average, which is actually it's tied for the American League best right now. It was 322 the other day. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., as long as he keeps it up, he's going to be able to win the American League batting champion.
Yeah, I do think it's a little collusion by the MLB. No, I'm joking. But I do think there should be an award I think the MLB should adopt where, like, the total batting champion. Like, because we've seen this before in MLB. They just need to adopt their ways, I feel like.
Yeah, in 1990, there was a guy that he was robbed of it. He had, like, a 330 batting average. And someone on the Cardinals, he had like a 334 batting average. And then the guy in the Cardinals was traded to the American League team. So his batting average was frozen at 334. And he performed awfully for his American League club. And his average went down to 322. But because his batting average in the National League was frozen, he won the batting title in the National League, even though his overall batting average wasn't that good. I mean, 322 is very good still, but, like, you know what I mean.
Yeah. You got to love baseball, really. Just, you know, not really keeping up with the times, I feel like, but.
You would think people would love baseball, but there are some that say the rules need to change. That would be Savannah Banana rules. Let's talk about that.
The Savannah Banana rules. I've heard of these, but would you like to read them off for me?
Yeah, I got you. So the first rule, just a second. The first rule is if you win the inning, you get the point. That means the team that scores the most runs in an inning gets a point. The first team to 5 points wins the game, and the inning is over once the home team takes a lead or three outs are recorded on the home team.
No, this isn't tennis. We're not playing sets. We're playing nine innings. Like, it's always been done.
Okay, the next rule is the two-hour time limit, which I could maybe understand, maybe. But it says no inning will start after the two-hour point. If a team has not reached 5 points, the game will go to a showdown tiebreaker.
No, baseball's timeless. You can try to speed it up all you want, but it's – when you try to speed it up, you're taking away from the game. You just – there should be no time limit for baseball.
Now, I will say MLB has tried to adopt this new rule. I don't know how much they've succeeded, but it's no stepping out. As a batter, you cannot step out of the batter's box once an at-bat starts. If a batter steps out at any point, it's a strike on the batter.
I think we could see that being – is it adopted? Is that what you said?
No, it's not adopted. Okay. The strike thing isn't adopted, but they definitely encourage you to not take as long if you step out. And then
the only thing I see with stepping out is like you're just playing head games with the pitcher. But I definitely could see the MLB changing that to where like you're not stepping out and then they do it a strike. That one I could see happening.
I mean, if you think about it, a pitcher can step off the mound at any time. Why can't a batter step out of the box? They still have to call time for the ump. So if the ump doesn't grant it to them, it's not like it's not their choice.
Yeah.
Next up, rule number 4, no bunting. The explanation is bunting sucks. Enough said. What do you think about that?
No, bunting's a part of strategy in baseball. You know, just keep it. That's unnecessary to say no bunting. No.
It's completely just agree. Especially in the National League, if a pitcher's up, why can't they sacrifice bunt a guy over to third? Like, it's strategy. You want to score the most runs. That's the best way to do it. Next thing is batters can steal first. Now this is a very interesting rule. It says if a pass ball or wild pitch happens during any pitch of an at-bat, the batter can take off the first. I mean, this could be very controversial because, like, let's say it's a pass ball and there's, like, a brick wall like Wrigley Field and it bounces right back to the catcher. You could be caught going. And once you take your foot out of the box, you have to go. There's no coming back.
I do think it'd be a cool rule to see happen in the MLB, but I don't see them adopting that one.
Next one is no walks allowed. This is another crazy one. So if a pitcher throws the fourth ball, it becomes a sprint. The hitter will take off sprinting to first while the catcher has to throw the ball around to every defensive player on the field before it becomes live. The hitter can advance to as many bases as he can before the ball becomes live. The ball does not have to touch the catcher or pitcher.
I'm not a fan of that one either. I think it takes away some strategy of the game. I say don't adopt that one as well.
Now, I will say it'd be pretty crazy to see some triples out of nowhere. Like, you don't get walked, but instead you can get a triple. It would definitely encourage having a better batter's eye. I'll say that.
What do you do with intentional walks then?
Oh, I guess you can't do intentional.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or if there's a runner on base, the runner gets to run too?
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, the rules don't say anything about that, but I'd assume that the runner on base gets to run too because you can't pass the runner on base.
No, I don't adopt. Get rid of it.
Okay, and then the next one is showdown tiebreaker. Each team picks one pitcher and one hitter to face off. The defensive team only has the pitcher, one fielder, and catcher on the field. All other fielders are off the field. If a hitter puts the ball in play, he has to score and make it home to get a point. If the ball is put in play, the pitcher and fielder are allowed to chase the ball and throw the ball to the catcher for a play at the plate. If a pitcher strikes him out or gets him out before scoring, he doesn't get a point. If the batter walks, he can take second base, and the hitting team will bring another hitter to the plate. First team to reach 5 points wins. If the score is tied, the first team to keep the other team from scoring wins.
I think it'd be cool to watch, but I don't think the MLB should adopt it. But what I do think they should do is add it to All-Star Weekend and do it as, like, maybe a challenge, like the Home Run Derby. I think that'd be cool to see. But for competitive games, no.
What I will say is those rules sound a bit complicated. It'd be a lot easier to understand it if you watched it happen. But I wouldn't mind, like, some type of showdown tiebreaker in the extra innings after like the 12th inning. I don't really like the man on second rule. I think they're changing that next year.
Yeah, but we're gonna go back to original extra inning rules.
But I could definitely see in extra innings, I'd say the 12th inning. Let's play 3 regular innings after the game. If there's not a winner, then do like a home run derby or something. Like, I don't think you need to make this complicated set of rules, but do like a home run derby. Pick a batter from each team, and whoever hits the most home runs in 5 pitches wins.
Yeah, I definitely could see that happening, but I don't know how long that's going to be to where that's adopted.
The next rule is no mound visits allowed. It says, let's keep the game moving. No mound visits from the coach, catcher, or any other players. Hype your pitcher up from afar if needed.
I don't agree with that one. I think mound visits are crucial to the game of baseball, and I would say don't bring that one in.
Yeah, I think it's very important to talk strategy if your pitcher's not feeling it right now. And the last rule, if a fan catches a foul ball, it's an out. Why not let the fans get in on some action?
No, you can't do that. Come on.
What I will say is that the fan has to be out of play. But yeah, I think it's a little ridiculous. Yeah. There's no need for that rule. I don't really like any of these rules in baseball. I think baseball should stick to the way it is, but there are some people that think that it could become more interesting. These are not the solutions, in my opinion.
I agree. I don't think these rules are needed for baseball. If baseball adopts these rules, I don't know if I could watch baseball, to be honest. I'm not a fan. I hope none of them get put into the rules, but you never know. With that said, that is all the time we have for today on the Locker Room. Wishing everyone a goodbye. I'm Thomas Tellerino with my co-host, Zach Roderick. We hope you all have a great week.